Welcome to Dithering on the Edge of Europe, the podcast about what it feels like to be European and live in the UK. I'm Carla Boom.
And I'm Rich McCarthy.
You're drinking something.
Just finishing off my smoothie.
Yeah, you should have finished off earlier.
Sorry.
We're in our second part of looking at the political guidelines of Ursula von der Leyen.
The new European leader.
Of the Commission. And, of course, last week we looked at the first section of a sort of vision, which was all about the European Green Deal. So we're taking it section by section. And today we're going to look at the section which she has labeled an economy that works for people. And it's actually quite nice, you know, how she puts forward her vision. And she says right at the beginning of the section, I want Europe to strive for more when it comes to social fairness and prosperity. And I think there's a sort of general theme that there's an acknowledgement of certainly the expressions by European leaders that it has to be more about the social aspects of a European Union. So she also emphasizes the social market economy, and she also mentions that the goal is for a climate neutral and healthy planet. We must build on a strong and resilient social market economy. So, you know, it emphasizes both the Green Deal, which I liked and which we, of course, talked about last time, but it emphasized the social market economy. And this term, I have to, you know, say that I don't hear that from our conservative political leaders in the UK. And so it's actually quite nice to hear it from European leaders.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think the one thing that I wanted to comment on was the fact that saying our goal for a climate neutral and healthy planet, I think we've got to, in order to have a climate neutral planet, we've got to get carbon out of the atmosphere from where it is now. Whereas Ursula von der Leyen's plans, we will only be reducing the amount of carbon we're putting into the atmosphere by 55% by 2030. The danger of that is that we are then becoming, we get to a tipping point where we can't stop carbon going into the atmosphere.
And of course, we've discussed that last week, but you're saying also something else. If we want to have a social market economy, it is about the environment. In order to have social justice, we need to have environmental justice.
Probably, but in terms of saving the planet, it's not so much about climate justice, but obviously I think we would all want climate justice. I mean, the planet might be okay if the UK carried on as it was and everybody else dropped their carbon emissions to zero, then maybe that would be all right. But that wouldn't be that wouldn't be just. And we couldn't really get people to do that. So so that wouldn't work. So it does need to be socially okay for things to work.
Right. Just to recap, so what you're saying is that, you know, having read this whole section, you're missing the embedding of carbon reduction as part of a section which talks about the economy.
What I'm saying is that, but the big point is that to get to a climate neutral Europe or a climate neutral planet, we've got to both get down to zero emissions and then remove millions of tons of carbon from the atmosphere, because the way things are at the moment, right at the moment, the climate is not a good, you know, the Earth is not in a healthy state. We are already having things where we're getting lots of people dying from heat stroke, etc., etc. From now until we get the climate back to the way it is now, will be about, I'm guessing, would be sort of 60, well, it's 30 years to 2050, and then it'd be another 40 years, so it'd be 70 years.
What would you like to see in her political vision, as is laid out here, that would address your point?
Well, there are some things that we talk about, we were going to talk about later, like carbon tax and things like that, which she doesn't mention in this
section.
Section where you'd imagine that taxes would come in.
So let's have a look further on.
Yeah, the second point was supporting small businesses. Hooray! Well, it seems like a great thing. She makes a great point that small businesses are 99% of all businesses in the EU and account for 85% of all jobs created in the last 5 years. They're innovators and entrepreneurs. That's terrific. That's really, really good. But then the next thing she does is, I want to make it easier for small business to become large innovators. She says, we need more young and nimble innovators with breakthrough technologies like this generation's tech giants were only a decade ago. So she wants tech giants. Do you want to say?
I want to make it easier for small businesses to become large innovators, which in itself doesn't necessarily need to be a bad thing, but it just creates a vision of we're going to create the next Google, we're going to create the next Amazon. And actually, that stands in tension with, first of all, the environmental side of things, but also the social side of things. Because in some ways, yes, we want to have sustainable companies, but we don't want to have these mega companies that can act as monopolies then.
Yeah, and the mega companies became the mega companies by not respecting people's rights and so on. So, you know, people who work for Amazon are not particularly happy, as far as I've discerned. So do we really want that?
Do we want the next generation of Amazons? And of course, we've talked about this before, because we know that Skype was a European innovation, actually. Yeah. It was, as far as I remember, Swedish-Finnish collaboration.
A Sweden and Dane.
Sorry, Sweden, Danish, and a bit of Estonian. Okay.
Yeah, well, let's say a person from Sweden, a person from Denmark, and then they had three Estonians who did the background stuff for them.
Right, okay. So that was Skype, and of course, as we know, it was sold to Microsoft. So of course, you know, looking at the economy in Europe, you would have to ask yourselves, what would have kept somebody like Skype in Europe? Mm-hmm. And I think we need to find the European Union kind of way forward. That is not the let's allow them to grow as big as Amazon and as big as Google, and then 10 years down the line, we have the same problems. And again, that kind of recipe is a recipe towards wealth concentration at the top again.
Yeah. Whereas what we ought to have is something like, oh, the EU could say, look, we will support you to grow it to the size of Europe. And rather than you having a ton of money, I think they first sold it to eBay for $2.6 billion.
Oh, did they?
Dollars, yeah. Mm. eBay sold a bit on, and then eventually everything went to Microsoft with a big... they made a lot of money out of it, eBay did.
Yeah.
But...
selling a second-hand...
yeah, that's right. A second-hand Skype thing.
Yes, exactly.
I wonder if they charged themselves a lot of money on that, like 10% or whatever.
And there wasn't even a bid, probably.
Maybe.
Maybe I could have had Skype for £1.
I don't think so.
Right.
Sorry, where were we? Oh, yes. So if an alternative to Skype came along and the EU said, we'll back it and we'll help you, you know, we'll help you ramp up and so on. So you can stay the boss of your creation. You can stay changing it the way that you want to change it. We'll help you with that. We'll help you get people all over the place to work for you. You know, that's great for Europe that lots of people get employed doing something that connects everybody really, really well instead of everybody flying in aeroplanes and things like that. And then it's a happy European business. The person at the top is earning, I'm sure, a lot of money, but not the same, not 2.6 billion. And everybody else in the company would be earning money as well, which is brilliant.
So can we create a European way, which is not about allowing individual companies to become so big that they basically are all but name a monopoly, but can create a sustainable employment for a community that chips into that?
Yeah, that would be good.
And of course, you know, the question comes...
We don't want the SMEs all turning into huge companies who don't give a damn about their employees.
Yeah. Right, okay. So that was... supporting small businesses.
Yeah. And then there's something you were going to talk about, something that's supposed to help with supporting small businesses.
The Capital Markets Union. That's what you're...
Oh, yes. The Capital Markets
Union. Yeah, so she's proposing that we will complete the Capital Markets Union to ensure SMEs have access to the financing they need to grow, innovate and scale up. So scale up is in there again. But this notion of to release capital. So I think there has been an awareness that Europe going forward needs to mobilize capital within Europe. There is this understanding that investment at the moment has remained reliant on the banking sector, on banks. And of course, financing, there are differences in financing between the different countries. There's also an understanding that shareholders rarely go beyond borders. And SMEs have limited access to finance. So in Germany, SMEs would get more likely the full amount that they have asked for. In another country, in the southern European states, they would likely be able to get that amount. So the question is, of course, you know, first of all, can we create something where all the SMEs have the same amount of access to financing? And can we unlock capital?
Yeah, as a sort of combat to angel investors, for example.
Yeah.
If you've got several billions rolling around, it's easy to be an angel investor. But we don't want billionaires. You know, it's fine if some people are millionaires, maybe, but we want the wealth distributed across the population properly.
But part of me is concerned about some of the things that have been proposed there, but it could possibly be simply because I don't understand the sector. Mm. So they talk about standardization of the securitization of the mortgage sector. I'm not sure if that's the right way.
Well, I think there's a problem at the moment in that people can go to places like the States and they can borrow from there.
Yeah.
And they're not so protected, or they just don't. You know, they either don't do it or they go to the States and get the money.
Yeah.
And we want them to stay here to develop their ideas,
exactly,
to develop their vision, without the danger that they'd be exposed to in the US and without just taking the whole idea and all the jobs and everything else to America, which has happened so traditionally in the past.
So going back to what that means in relation to the Capital Markets Union, where I don't know, where I'm not sure about, I would hope, I would want to see that the European Union puts a bit of checks and balances and democratic accountability into the banking sector, because actually the crash is a result of a trajectory that unregulated the financial sector and thought that, you know, free market competition will just take care of everything.
Yeah, which obviously it doesn't.
Yeah. You need a bit of state. That's the question for me, but I can't tell what it is.
Yeah, we can't figure that out. Okay, moving on to the next thing that we saw in this was, I think, the stuff about the euro.
Yeah.
So she will prioritise the further deepening of the economic and monetary union, i.e. the number of countries who are members of the eurozone, which I don't think is necessarily a good thing that she prioritises that.
Where does it say that?
It doesn't say that, but that's what deepening of the economic and monetary union. Well, when we turn over, it says, as part of this, I will help deliver a budgetary instrument for convergence and competitiveness for the euro area. To support member states' growth reforms and investments, I will step up support for those countries outside the euro area who are preparing to join. So that's the five countries who aren't members of the eurozone, but I think the understanding is that they will become members as soon as they meet the criteria for it.
Yeah.
The only two countries who are outside the eurozone and don't have to join it when they could are Denmark and Britain.
But in terms of the euro, we're also of split minds. Now, I, of course, coming from Germany, and Germany joined the euro, and of course, you know, practically or pragmatically, I just love when I go to Europe and I can roam through Europe and I only need one currency. So there's this very, very practical ease of use in there.
And I, yeah.
However, you know, I think we've had these discussions and you certainly persuaded me that having a common currency is different from being part of the European Union, and having a common currency whilst being in Europe is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. I think it makes it harder for you to control what happens to your own economy, your own country's economy.
Yeah.
So they're deepening the European Union does point towards they're becoming a European economy rather than a German economy and a French economy and a British economy and a blah, blah, blah.
And, you know, I've always found, and we've discussed that we discuss the European Union as if it's everything, the European currency, the European market, mobility. But I think these are different things. And, I, you know, in my sort of conceptualization, I was always very pro-European, but, you know, European currency, I'm not so convinced. Or you persuaded me to almost be against, but I'm completely for being in the European Union.
Well, the thing about to be in the euro, to get the euro, you were supposed to control your inflation rate. You had to have a certain amount of public finances available. You had to have interest rates within a certain band. and you had to have exchange rate stability.
And of course, once you're locked in, then it's very difficult to use your, I don't know what it's called, your currency as a...
You can't de-inflate your economy by allowing inflation to go up.
On a positive note, and just talking about euro notes, what I really loved about the euro project was the design of the bridges. And, you know, the money, the paper money of the euros is just beautiful because it had gateways, you know.
No, big arguments about there were supposed to be bridges that weren't based on reality. But then when people started looking at them, they went, hang on, this bridge is this bridge in Germany or something like this, bridge to Germany to somewhere else. And then they did start finding out where the bridges came from because were in actual fact based on real bridges. Yeah.
Right, okay, so that was a euro, and if we move on...
So we're a bit dubious about going full-blown on the euro. I think they ought to expand the social charter and so on first, for me.
Yeah.
She would say, oh, you've got to pay for everything, you've got to get the money sorted before you can do everything else, but look at what happened to Greece and Spain and Ireland.
Yeah, because, I mean, it comes back to, you know, the first section that we talked about, you know, big tech and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's... You know, to me, sounds like there's a tension between the typical theory of the trickle-down economy. So if you boost the big players in the economy, it will surely trickle down. But of course, we're actually thinking that the trickle-down economy doesn't work and certainly hasn't worked in the UK. So you need a much more wealth distribution economy and a fairer taxes. And of course, we'll get to the tax because she has a section on tax and we're missing that a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Europe's social pillar, which we had to look up.
Yeah, so I realised I did jump
the
European Parliament to have a louder voice when it comes to the economic governance of our union.
Yeah.
I was looking for that, actually.
But I think we don't need to do that now, because we've already done it, so you might want to cut that out.
No, I don't want to cut it out. It's actually important, and I'm going to repeat it even. In this spirit, I want the European Parliament to have a louder voice when it comes to the economic governance of our union. I think it is important. Because that means that proportionally selected members of parliament have a democratic, you know, there's a democratic scrutiny that gives accountability back to the people and to the region and not to individual leaders.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which can be problematic because individual leaders, there's a one-to-one vote, as we know. So the council is made out of the individual leaders and the vote of one country, which might be a big one, is equivalent to the vote of another leader, which might be of a country of a small one.
And it can be that the economic instruments that work really well for the southeast of England, which is where most MPs reside around all the time, because that's where London is, don't work very well for Scotland, for southwest England, all sorts of other places.
And that's why proportional representation is so important. And that's why, as part of the European Union, to have European Parliament to have a louder voice when it comes to economic governance, I think is a big step forward and, you know, I completely welcome.
Yeah.
Right. Europe's social pillar. It's a whole section on that.
Europe's pillar. Social pillar.
The European pillar of
the
social rights.
The European pillar of social rights.
Sorry.
I'll just say those things again
European
so that people can understand.
Pillar. I'm going to stop there. I'm going to let you. How about you say the first word?
European
pillar of social rights.
Okay.
Together we make it work.
Yes. I think that's the whole point of the European pillar of social rights.
Yeah, and that's a nice one.
I'd never heard of it before. And we've been doing lots of stuff about Europe and I'd still never heard of it before.
Yes. So in short, and I'm going to quote Jean-Claude Juncker, a fair and more social Europe is key in shaping our union's future. This is what citizens rightly expect. I want the EU to stand up for the rights of its citizens in a fast-changing world. This is what the European pillar of social rights is all about. So that was in 2017. And so it has been a project ongoing for the last few years. And there was even a public consultation process in 2016. And then it was agreed, the pillars were agreed in 2017. Was that right?
That's right, in Gothenburg in Sweden at the Social Summit for Fair Jobs on the 17th of November 2017.
The pillar of social rights is about delivering new and more effective rights for citizens built upon 20 key principles.
And there are three main categories. So there's equal opportunities and access to the labour market, which sounds very sort of labour market sounds rubbish, but yeah. For people, I think it really means fair working conditions for people, and social protection and inclusion is the third aspect.
And under these three sections are specific areas, like under equal opportunities and access to the labour market, there's education, training and lifelong learning, gender equality, equal opportunities and active support to employment. And of course, there's a sort of effort to understand, you know, which countries are struggling in which areas in order to pool efforts into those areas. And I found a scoreboard. Mm-hmm. And in that scoreboard, I can say, I can select the year. We don't have many years yet in terms of the data. So at the moment, I've got 2016. I can select the indicator.
Okay.
And I will sort the countries alphabetically.
Okay. So where does the UK come on the indicator then? Out of 28. France?
I will put a link into the show notes and people can then look things up. But shall we look at early leavers from education and training adult participation and learning?
Oh, yeah.
Because we know we're doing so. So let's look at that. Adult
Surely
participation and
learning.
Surely
that would be a good thing to have with if you want an economy that is agile.
So top, Sweden.
Right. Okay.
Denmark, Finland, France. But there's a big drop between, so Sweden, Denmark and Finland are quite relatively close together. And then the whole
thing drops.
France, Netherlands, Luxembourg, Estonia, Austria, United Kingdom, Slovenia.
Oh, so we're in the top half this time, top third this
time. Yeah. Then comes the average of the euro area. Then comes the average of the European Union. Then Portugal, Spain, Czech Republic, Germany. I just can't believe it. I thought our adult education is gone. So why are we in the top half?
Because lots of people who are unemployed get to go onto apprenticeship schemes and be paid less while they're doing the job, whereas they used to just go and do the job. Like, you know, they go and work for Tesco's, they get paid less money than normal so that they can be trained to stack shelves and stuff, as opposed to just going and stacking shelves and being paid the normal wage.
So you're not saying this has worked? Our strategy in the UK has worked?
I don't know. Maybe... Well, I'm reading that with obviously a particular bent in mind, but I think our apprenticeship scheme is not very good. I nearly said something I shouldn't say on the podcast, but
So if I look
and maybe some of the apprenticeship schemes worked brilliantly. If you've got school leavers and they really want to be an apprentice in a certain area, then that would be fab. But I think it's being used by people like Tesco's to underpay people, and then the taxpayer has to pick up the tab for paying for those people's housing. They ought to be getting a living, they ought to be getting a wage that they can live
you're
off.
You're getting into details there, but you know, but basically what you're saying is there are ways to hide behind statistics.
Absolutely.
Or you can do it in such a way that the statistics look quite good. As we know, in terms of our unemployment rates, we're in the European Union the fourth best country in terms of unemployment rates, but we actually know that when you look at the living net income, you know, there are so many families struggling, but they don't appear here. Right, moving on.
The next area, which is, yes, in terms of health, I was going to say that I would like her to be sort of saying we want to ensure that drugs stay very cheap and they don't become hugely expensive. They don't become privatized and hugely expensive as they have done in America.
Absolutely.
We need to legislate to make sure that doesn't happen. Something about that would be great.
I think, you know, it would have been lovely to, you know, to have seen it in her proposal.
Yeah.
Right, moving on.
Yeah, okay.
The whole next section is under the heading of a union of equality. And, of course, the European Pillar of Social Rights are part of this, but there are other things in there, and we don't have to go into the details of that, but anti-discrimination legislation, to have an EU gender strategy, to have pay transparency, to have gender balance quotas on corporate boards, to have gender equality in the Commission itself, in the EU Commission itself, and to also add to the official list of EU crimes, violence against women. So those are all things that she's...
Yeah, does she say actually violence against women or does she say domestic violence? Because it can be violence against men too.
I will propose to add violence against women to the list of EU crimes defined in the treaty.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
That's what she says.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last section is about fair taxation.
Yeah, which is really important because this is the way we pay for stuff, by taxing people and by taxing companies who earn money in the European area.
Yeah, she mentions international corporate tax systems, which are in need of reform.
EU and international corporate tax systems.
Which are in urgent need of reform.
Yeah, of course the EU is a big player. And she says we're either going to get it by 2020, or if there's no global solution for a fair digital tax, things of people, the big tech companies, who basically have their fingers in pies in every single country in the world and then say, well, we go through this country, which charges 4% business tax rate, so we're just paying 4% business tax to them, which is a load
right.
of baloney because,
okay.
you know, they're making loads of money from Europe.
She talks about different kind types of tax. She talks about big tech tax, but also a fair digital tax. And I wasn't quite clear if those were two separate things or the same things. She also talks about corporate tax. And that's where she says, everyone pays their fair share. There can be no exceptions. So it's quite nice. That's very assertive stance in order to say, I will stand for tax fairness, whether for bricks and mortar or digital businesses.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, and I don't know how she will bring that through. There's a little clause in there where she says about the process. She says, I will make use of the clauses in the treaties that allow proposals on taxation to be adopted by co-decision and decided by qualified majority voting in the council. This will make us more efficient and better able to act fast when needed. So there seemed to, you know, there's a sort of indication that before to have 100% unanimity,
yeah.
it has been problematic. And certainly the council needs to move towards qualified majority voting in order to push things through like that, which need to be pushed through quite quickly.
This comes after her talking about differences in tax rules can be an obstacle to the deeper integration of the single market.
Right.
So it might mean that there's an tax rates right across the EU, for
yeah.
example. So again, that would be people like people. Some people who don't want to be in the EU here would say, ah, you can't say that we've all got to pay the same tax on something. I don't understand why.
And I think there are also some other things that she doesn't mention there, which I would have liked to see. One is...
Go ahead. I'm all ears.
Well, one is about the notion of wealth distribution again. You know, so she talks only about corporate taxes. She doesn't talk about individual taxes. And I think we've created a system, as you know, as I've ranted before, a sort of neoliberal system which pooled wealth at the top. And we need to unravel that. And the easiest way to unravel that and create wealth distribution is by a more fair tax system on individuals and their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't address that. And so I can't quite tell, is that because she doesn't want to upset an electorate, wherever they might be? Is that she doesn't believe that is a feasible strategy on an EU level, that she can't hold countries to account? Does she think that's only a thing that countries can decide? Nations are sovereign in relation to their individual tax systems. But I think that, you know, the wealth distribution is a big problem. And it has to do with the social pillars. And it has to do with the social market economy. So not to tackle that is really problematic.
Yeah. But the other thing was, I thought there should be something about taxing currency exchange.
Not having...
She doesn't mention it. We should have a tax on changing currency. So, you know, to stop people speculating against the euro, against the pound, against anything else. You know, and it's been put forward ages and ages and ages ago. I can't remember what it's called, a Tobin tax, that was it.
Yeah.
And the Tobin tax, the idea was 0.5% tax rate every time you change money from, you know, big amounts of money from one currency to another one. And because at the moment, people have suggested that maybe some of the EU people wanting to foment the whole idea of us leaving the EU is simply so to knock the value of the pound down so that they can exchange money and make loads of money by doing that.
Yeah.
So that would be a really important thing, I think. And the other one would be an exorbitant energy use tax, I think we should have.
An exorbitant energy tax, yeah, absolutely. And I think she does mention something actually quite important. She does say that she's taking up the fight against tax fraud.
Yes, well, that is really important. you know, to make everybody pay their fair share of tax. And obviously there are going to be people trying to
it is the, defraud it is, the system. It is the last paragraph in the section. In the same spirit, I will step up the fight against tax fraud and make our action against harmful tax regimes in third countries stronger.
Yeah.
But, of course, we're probably one of the worst.
Yeah, I think we are probably one of the worst countries. And we, worse than being the worst country, I don't know if we are the worst country, but worse than being a bad country in terms of tax fraud, we encourage other countries and we produce the means by which other people can be tax frauds.
Right. But tax fraud or tax avoidance?
Same difference.
Yeah, because I think, you know, in some ways people say, you know, London's almost the best tax haven. And then, of course, we've got parts of our, like, the British Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And they are tax havens.
Yeah.
And in some ways, we shouldn't. And, of course, that's the detrimental, that's the regrettable, absolutely abysmal situation that we're in, that I have a feeling if we do Brexit, it's going to get worse. We're going to be the biggest tax haven in Europe.
Well, that's the whole policy, I think, of people who think we can do well is by us having a tiny tax rate and then importing things or things going into Europe through us, and therefore we're just a middle person.
Yeah.
And that's how we'd make all our money.
And again, that doesn't benefit anyone other than the top.
Yeah.
It pools resources to the top.
Mm.
So, are we dithering if we want to stay in or out? No, we're not dithering. We're firm.
We still say yes, definitely. We want to be in the EU.
We're still clinging on to the European Union.
Mm.
And then in the next podcast, we're going to look at...
Look at the next area, the next chapter of Ursula von der Leyen's. So everybody actually will remember her name if they listen to this all the time. And I will be able to remember her name as well.
Well, I'll tell you what. The next section which we will cover is A Europe Fit for the Digital Age.
Okay, that's good.
Shall we leave it at that?
Yep. We've been on this for a long time now, an hour and a half, I think.
1 hour and 20 minutes.
But hopefully the podcast isn't that long.
Please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. Feel free to follow us on Twitter on Dithering on the Edge. Goodbye for now and have a fabulous week.
Bye.